This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Hey, stay sharp.
12 o'clock on Friday, so that means it's time to
love it.
To get it swinging.
Let's go.
Evan was always talking about how we love that Good Vibrations little bump music that we had, so we made it part of our
you
open.
You just can't be in a bad mood when you listen to that song, ever.
That's right.
Whenever it comes on.
Real hip-hop,
always
no sellout.
Always Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
You ain't in it or win it. You know where you could go. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Glad to have you with us on this frigid day where school is closed everywhere.
Is.
How are the roads coming in from Elkhart
today?
They're
okay.
Not too bad?
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, like we talked about well, when was that cold day? Maybe it was with Tom Noy. It's the bad drivers that make the roads dangerous.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. It's either the guys who still think they have to do 60 in a 40,
right.
By the way.
Or the ones that drive too slow.
That's right. Or the ones doing 15 in a 40. That's right. Just stay in between and you'll be fine.
I will say those that have been out on the roads, clearing them off and salting them, have done a great job.
That's exactly right. You know, Dan Patrick and the guys were talking about some of Brad Pitt's roles, and that we had a little Brad Pitt there, a little Moneyball, in the open there. And I think that was actually because they were talking about Brad Pitt's acting performances. I think that was probably one of his better overall performances.
What about Inglourious Bastards?
Inglourious, I did like that.
I liked that one a lot too.
I did.
And have you seen Fury?
I did.
Did you like that?
You know, I tell you what, I didn't really like it as much the first time I saw it, and then I watched it again and liked it a little bit more.
I've had several people recommend that to me. I haven't watched it yet. I've heard it's really good.
It's different in terms of, like, just the way it's done if you compare that to Saving Private Ryan, which I put up there as far as any World War II movie. It's just done a little bit differently, a little bit more dramatic focus, I think, things like that. But overall, it's a pretty solid World War II movie.
So then we've got Fight Club still. 7. Have you seen that?
I did.
I watched that for a class, actually.
I like that. The only part about it was at the end with the whole, what's in the box? A little too much. A little too over the top, I think.
Benjamin Button, yes or no?
I thought that was solid.
I was a no for me.
No.
But Ocean's 11, for sure.
Very good.
Yeah.
Always eating something. In Ocean's 11,
right.
And in Moneyball, always something.
While he's talking, always.
Hand to mouth, all the time.
Great.
He did, and I noticed that the funny thing is, after seeing all the Ocean's movies, he always had that, whether it was the shrimp cocktail or the sandwich or whatever. But then in Moneyball, he was doing that as well. Was eating something.
And
maybe he's just got a high metabolism.
Here's a sleeper one for one of my favorite roles is it was the assassination of Jesse James.
I never saw that.
It was really good. And if you're a history buff like myself, then I thought it was
and
a good movie.
And I am
movie.
As well.
It was really, I thought he did a really good job with that. And then one of my other favorite movies, and he's not the main character in this, but he's in it, is The Big Short. If you haven't seen that, that's another one you need to see.
You know, my wife and I started watching that on Netflix.
Yeah.
A couple, and we got about halfway through, and she was falling asleep. And we didn't get all the way through it.
Well, you need to watch it again. I like that movie, The Big Short.
The only problem with The Big Short is we know how it ends.
Right. Well, it's true.
The housing market crashes.
I think that one is kind of more of, it's a unique style of filming. Where they're talking to you, so it's a little more interactive.
True, kind of like The Office.
Some people like that, some people don't. I like it, and I love The Office, too. So
yeah, there was some Dwight Schrute in
Dwight's the man.
The martial arts guy there.
Dwight is the man.
In The New Hope as well. All right, we do talk a little sports here. I was telling you before we went on, though, I watched Get Out, the movie Get Out, last night. And I watched the Golden Globes Sunday, and what I can't come to terms with, and I heard some other people say this too, why was Get Out considered a comedy, and you haven't seen it, but it's essentially a horror movie. And I real there's some sarcasm and kind of slick lines and stuff like that. I don't know even slick lines, but it's not a comedy.
It's not.
It is not a comedy by any stretch. And I don't know if it's just because Jordan Peele did it, who is
so it comes with being
known
funny,
for
right?
comedy. Yeah, but it's not a comedy by any means.
So that's a good warning, though. Thank you.
Yeah.
So probably not going to watch that with my wife.
Don't expect it to be a comedy. Yeah, okay. And I watched it by myself because I knew my wife, like, if she sees some of this stuff, she'll go to bed and have nightmares and stuff like that.
Same.
So I watched it by myself, and she comes in, what are you watching? Get Out.
Did she get out?
She did.
All right.
But, yeah, it was not a comedy. And I also saw John Wick just earlier this week, and Dan Patrick was talking about that, and he did, in fact, kill a lot of people. And the weird thing, and it's like I'm sitting here watching this movie, and the whole thing is he's a former, like, hitman, and he was tied to these Russian mobsters and stuff like that, and the son of the Russian mobster, spoiler alerts here, the son of the Russian mobster steals his car, he had a really nice Mustang, and kills his dog, and so that sets him off on this,
as we could imagine,
on this 2-hour killing spree throughout the movie. And I've got John Wick 2 on DVR ready to go right now. All right, so that's our movie open for today. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. And of course, we're brought to you by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion call today for a complimentary class. 574-226-8234. Visit SharpleyTraining.com. We actually do have a lot of sports stuff to get into today as we get into this weekend. Notre Dame basketball coming up tomorrow. We've got that for you. A lot of NFL this weekend. A busy week, especially early in the week. It's calmed down in the last 48 hours or so as far as Notre Dame is concerned, Evan. But the biggest news of two big pieces of news this week. One was maybe a little bit more shocking, and that is offensive line coach Harry Hiestand leaving after six seasons at Notre Dame and building some of the best offensive line and linemen in school history. He's going to go back to Chicago, where he was a little bit more than a decade or so ago when he helped the Bears get to the Super Bowl, but he's going to be Matt Nagy's offensive line coach. And, of course, Harry has developed some really good offensive linemen, Zach Martin, Ronnie Stanley, Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson on this year's team. I guess just some of your initial thoughts when you heard that Harry was leaving, though.
Just a sad day for Notre Dame football fans. Sad day. I mean, I think what he's done hasn't gotten enough credit with, I mean, if you look at the guys that he's developed, and also too, if you sit down and talk with those guys, I mean, they will go to battle for him.
Right.
You know, he's one of those coaches that he will let you know exactly where you stand at all times. And as a player, you respect that. And you can see he yells quite a bit. I mean, there's tension out there, but there's still, you know, a very, high level of mutual respect between the player and the coach. And in talking with a couple of guys, I actually did an interview with Braxton Cave on our game day show, and kind of talked about, you know, his demeanor, and actually and Mike Golic Jr. too, talking with those guys, like what made him so good. And the through line that we continued to hear was his attention to detail was on a different level. And a lot of these guys would say they'd get into the film room and they may watch three plays in an hour instead of, all right, we're gonna try to get through
buzz
as many
through
plays.
All
right.
This.
He would sit with the clicker and they might watch the same play for 25 minutes. And it might be one specific thing, but that was the detail, the level of detail that he demanded from his guys as far as their pass set, their run blocking. And there were times on the field, too, that they may overset by 6 inches, and Hiestand comes firing in and lets them know that, well, that's 6 inches too far to your right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to have, you know, that standard, an unwavering standard, too, it's not like, okay, you know, year one and year two, I'm going to come in and we're going to set this bar. You know, that continued. There was it was everything was black and white. I mean, there wasn't any gray area as far as Harry Hiestand was concerned, and that's why the players bought into it. I think the style of offense that's been run while he's been there was exactly what he wanted? No. I think he would probably prefer less of the zone read and more of a downhill smash mouth type of mentality. I mean, if you've ever listened to him talk or coach, I would think that those he probably would prefer those plays for his guys much more. But it's been unbelievably impressive. Number one, the guys that he's had at the college level, but then the pros that they've turned into as well. His track record speaks for itself. Was I surprised? A little bit, I think. And with the state of the Bears, is it a more attractive place to go coach than Notre Dame? I guess, what does that say about coaching here in South Bend?
Well, they do have a new head coach, obviously, sure, in Nagy, and they are
young
trying
quarterback
to get
too.
This thing. And that's
right.
That's a big thing. A young quarterback. We know, well, I was about to say we know that the NFL pays more, but Nick Saban's making more than even John Gruden, I think, right now. But in general,
do you think Harry
assistant
was
coaches
like,
get paid better?
Hey, I saw you have more money in the banana stand after yeah, offering
right.
Elko. What do you guys got for me?
That's right. But they're bringing in Mark Helfrich, the former Oregon offensive coordinator and head coach. He had more success as an offensive coordinator than a head coach. And I think it's the big thing they have.
There's some
the
good
building
pieces,
block,
right?
Yeah, they have the building, and he's worked in the NFL before, so he knows the difference better than anyone.
Sure.
The difference between being in the NFL and being in college, and I'm sure that as guys get older, they probably don't want to have to travel as much and go recruit and things like that. I think that has to wear on you, just the amount of travel and things like that you're doing year round. Whereas in the NFL, while the job might be year round, that kind of travel and things like that is
it's more
is
regional
more
than in the off season.
Yeah, exactly.
No doubt.
Exactly. So there are some differences there. How big an impact do you think this is going to have on the offense as a whole?
Well, it'll depend on who they bring in and what that will look like. But this is a massive hit in my mind.
Well, because across the board, you've got guys like Mike Mayock and former linemen and everyone talking about this is one of the best offensive line coaches in the country, if not the best
offensive line coach.
Joe
Moore, award winner
last
year.
So if you're going to go from that, no matter where you're going to go, no matter how good the next guy is, it's going to be a step down to some extent.
And that won't be a hit at whoever's next, but it's the credit to Harry Hiestand and what he's done. I mean, you have and two, I think in moving next year, it was going to be really important to have Hiestand around when you're filling a Mike McGlinchey, when you're trying to replace the shoes of Quentin Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these guys are all really talented, but who was helping and guiding their development was this man. So now you're saying from that left side of the line, you're having to really rebuild that left side of the line. And if there's been any in terms of what we've seen, you know, once Ronnie Stanley left, it took McGlinchey really over a year to get comfortable with that switch from right to left.
Mm-hmm.
So saying, hey, we're going to switch this guy from right tackle to left tackle is good in theory, is great on paper, even if the guy had played some last year. But you don't know if it's going to translate right away.
Yeah, you still have to make it work.
And there's and that's the challenging part in college football. Guys graduate. Guys go to the NFL.
Sure.
So you're constantly battling with, you know, chemistry at the line of scrimmage and, you know, building a unit that is working as one. And that there was inconsistency not last year, but the year before in the 4-8 season. And, you know, you didn't really see that as much this year. There was much more consistency, cohesion, communication. When those guys were on, they were on. And that's why they garnered so much respect across the country as one of the best, or if not the best, offensive line in the nation.
Darren and I talked about this last night on Sports Beat. You think about a guy like Mike Golic Jr. as a prime example of what Harry Hiestand does in terms of developing guys. When Harry's first season here, first season here was 2012, the BCS championship game season, and that was Golic Jr.'s fifth year at Notre Dame. His first 4 years at Notre Dame, he had started a total of four games.
He was my scout team center.
Yeah, and he started all 13 games during that championship season at guard and helped that team average over 200 yards rushing and 200 passing yards in the same season. That was just the third time it's ever been done at Notre Dame.
That's crazy.
When you think about it in those terms.
Tapped out his potential for sure.
What you talked about some of the attention to detail that Heistand has as a guy playing another position, an important position behind that offensive line. How much can you see those things on a daily basis from another position
it's,
group
it's
like
less
that.
About seeing it, you hear it. So you know how dialed in that offensive line is based on the checks and the calls that they're making at the line of scrimmage. So when you're walking up there and you're making your calls or you're giving your cadence or calling a protection or changing a play, how quickly, or is it one of the guys turning around and looking at you and you make eye contact and you both see exactly the same thing on the other side? This guy's aligned here. There's a blitz coming from this side, signaling to the running back that I may need help on this. You know when your line is dialed in, when they're seeing the same thing that you are at the same time or even quicker for guys that maybe have a little more experience.
With all the NFL head coaching vacancies and movement, there are a lot of possibilities from these ranks. And remember, Heistand didn't come straight from the Bears. He was with the Tennessee Titans for a couple of years before he came to Notre Dame. Frank Pollock was actually fired in Dallas, but he's already apparently going to be the Bengals' offensive line coach. And they might just end up trading those two teams because Paul Alexander, who was in Cincinnati for 23 years, was fired there. He's interviewing in Dallas. Tom Cable was let go in Seattle, so he's on the market as well. So there's been a lot of shakeup. Yeah, there have. And again, there's all this turnover. And when you've got a guy like John Gruden, who's coming in out of the cold, hasn't been in coaching for 10 years, he's plucking guys from staff. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of movement going on right now.
It's going to be interesting, though, what happens here this offseason. You know, some up-and-coming coordinators could be in new homes.
Yeah, true too. Brian Ferentz from Iowa is a name that I've heard. He's the offensive line coach there and a really good one. But I would think it would be tough to get him out of there considering he's working for his dad.
Yeah, I think it's Ferentz Field, isn't it?
That's right.
and too, I mean, traditionally they have one of the best or better offensive lines too. I mean, when you think of the Big Ten and you think of success at the offensive line, you know, what comes to my mind is Wisconsin and Iowa. You know, those are teams that are built on, when they're good, they're built on success at the offensive line. Big, 6'5", 6'6", guys that push people around. That would be a tough sell.
Yeah, I would think so.
Why, I mean, I guess what benefit would you see in leaving?
Again, it would be really tough because you're already in a pretty good
and established
situation.
There, sure.
Established. Your dad is the head coach. I think that would be really tough to try to get him away. Even if they throw a lot of money at him. And I don't, who knows how that's going to work. All right. It is 12:18, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. And the other news earlier this week, of course, is Clark Lee gets promoted from linebacker coach to defensive coordinator. Before we get to that, or maybe kind of segueing into that, which do you think is the bigger loss? Mike Elko leaving Notre Dame or Harry Heistand leaving?
Man, I flipped a coin. I don't know. I mean, it's they're both big losses. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're looking at the turnaround from 2016 to 2017, and you can point your finger at one reason why, you're going to say it's the defense. So I've got to go with Elko.
Really?
It's really close for me, though.
Yeah.
Because of Heistand's longer track record at Notre Dame, too, and the guys that he's turned out. But in my mind, in looking at what happened from one year to the next, if there was one thing I could put my finger on and say, this is why they won 10 games, I look at the defense.
All right. I tell you what, I'll answer that after we take a timeout and we'll talk about Clark Lee and some other stuff. We've got Notre Dame basketball coming up this weekend, Notre Dame, North Carolina tomorrow. The women had a hard time last night, man, but as we talked about last week, they're really strapped now. They're down four players to ACLs and went to Louisville. Just ran into a buzzsaw, losing 167.
They might have to grab a couple of the girls' basketball players from Northridge High School that work out at Sharpley Training.
Grab some volleyball players or something.
Brooke McKinley had 31 points the other night. Morgan Littwiller's having a really good year, too. So
ready to go. Suit her up.
They might have to just make the jump. Forget the second half of their senior year, right?
Very well might at that point. All right, so we're going to talk a little Clark Lee, Mike Elko. That's coming up next when the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. And, of course, the Irish actually host North Carolina tomorrow at 6 o'clock, 5:40 pregame right here on WSBT. Jack Nolan with the call as the Fighting Irish look to bounce back from that game against Georgia Tech Wednesday night, a 7-point loss, and things just did not go well offensively, and they'll look to get on track. Still no Matt Farrell, it sounds like, for tomorrow when the Fighting Irish host the Tar Heels. And I guess the good news is this year, North Carolina is still going to be good, but they're not what they were last year by any stretch.
The guys are going to have to step up. We talked about it on the show last week. You've got your two leaders and scorers not playing. It's going to have to be a nightly thing, too.
Stepped up against NC State, and it's going to be interesting because you've got Syracuse with their typical 2-3 zone that they play. The Irish managed to find a way on the big play by Rex Pfluger at the end of that one. But Georgia Tech, a zone team as well, a different kind of zone, and really different kind of zones when you play them because they switch in and out all the time. But so now they're going to get back to a team that's going to play a lot more man-to-man at what are the Irish going to do defensively. But can they get that offense back in a flow? Because against NC State, they only had Matt Farrell for 15 minutes of that game, didn't have Bonzi Colson at all, and they went from scoring 88 points in that one to barely a little over 100 points combined in the last two games.
You got to believe that Mike Bray in practice is trying to find, what's going to work best as far as you use the word flow with this offense, and I think that he's used that a few times on his show as well, as getting the right mix of guys, getting the guys in the right spot on the floor, being efficient with the ball. He said he likes this group as far as how they defend, but obviously you're going to have to score some points too. And in this conference as well, you're playing really good teams every night.
Yeah.
So it's, you got to be able to bring it consistently.
The thing about Carolina, too, is it's not just what you do half-court defense because they want to get out and transition with their secondary break and all that. And you got to be able to keep up with them and not just let them.
That's my favorite type of offense. We ran an offense that really wasn't an offense in high school. We just called it fast break offense.
Yeah.
And we were weaving different spots on the floor, and it was trying to get lost in transition. I love the transition three. That's an easy way to beat defenses if you can do that. Once you get into your half court set, it's a little bit different. Teams are able to be a little more structured as far as their defense. But if you can get out and get running, it makes a big deal. And especially too, you look at college and pro. That's something that's very similar is the length and athleticism in the pro and the college game right now. The game is much different. You're seeing less of your prototypical 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 positions, and you're seeing guys that all can carry the ball.
Yeah, more ambiguity with the positions.
It's less. It's not set in stone necessarily. It may be based on who you're guarding if you're playing man, but you're seeing guys with a lot more versatility across the board.
So Notre Dame at 3-1 in the ACC. They've got, including tomorrow night, they've got 7 home games remaining. And when you look at it now, okay, if they can split these next two games against North Carolina and Louisville, just with the home games alone, if they can protect their home court the rest of the way, which is doable looking at some of the teams.
It's a good position to be in to have that many home games.
Yeah, you're talking about 9 ACC wins right there, just if you can protect your home floor, if you only lose one home game the rest of the
year. You'll put yourself in a really good position. Absolutely. You win 9 games.
Absolutely.
In this conference.
Then you go out, they've already taken one road game in the ACC. If they can go out and steal one or two more, then you're really in good shape.
And also, I mean, and Bray made this point as well, because of the caliber of talent in the league, you're going to have some opportunities for some resume building wins.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So if you're at 9 wins and you've beaten X, Y, and Z, it's going to be pretty strong.
Yep. Got Carolina twice. They go home and home with North Carolina. They got at Duke, which is always going to be tough no matter what. But there's really just everyone, the ACC. Now, the bottom doesn't look very good, but mm-hmm. it's just going to be really competitive, I think, in the top half of the conference. You've got NC State got blown out by Notre Dame and then went and beat Duke a couple days
later.
That's
what's fun about it.
That's absolutely right. All right, 12:29, and again, that game tomorrow is a 5:40 pregame, 6 o'clock tip-off. A little different tip-off time, but you'll hear it right here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT. And then I'll just go ahead and run through the rest of the weekend as well, because we've got a lot of stuff. Join in progress, NFL divisional playoffs. After that, Tennessee at New England, roughly 7:45 or so. Well, I think 7:45 is their pregame, but that'll be tomorrow night as well. Tennessee and New England. And then Sunday at 12:30 pregame, Jacksonville at Pittsburgh. And then after that, it'll be New Orleans
and Minnesota. A lot of offense in that Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game.
Oh, man. We were talking about that earlier this week, the Jacksonville-Buffalo game. I mean, they might as well have been wearing leather helmets.
If you can be an NFL quarterback and throw for 80 yards and win a football game, saying something about your defense.
Blake Bortles.
Because I saw a lot of Lions fans complaining about, you know, Matthew Stafford, and watching that game had to have been frustrating because Stafford in a playoff game threw for 350 or 360, three touchdowns, and they lose.
Yeah.
And then you've got a guy throw for 80 yards, no touchdowns, and you win.
Difference is they play defense, though.
That's right.
Saxonville. And I heard before the game that term had swept the country, and I'm thinking maybe today. I don't know about sweeping the country, but
we're wiggling it in right now.
That's right. Blake Bortles, Leonard Fournette, and that Saxonville defense.
There we go.
There you go. So they're taking on the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell. Did you hear about the stuff going on with him and his contract? He's mad because
he doesn't feel valued, correct?
Right, and they might slap the franchise tag on him, and he doesn't want to be franchised. He said he might retire if they put the franchise tag on him. And I don't have a problem with his sentiment. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he's talking about it going into their first playoff game of the year, because you got to look at it this way. Here's prime example. 2 years ago, Dez Bryant got the franchise tag slapped on him, and he wasn't happy about it. They got into the season, they reworked his contract, but he ended up getting hurt that year. And now there's all this talk about whether the Cowboys should release Dez Bryant, all this stuff. And that's what, from the players' point of view, that's what they're talking about. They don't want to be franchised, because if they go out in that season and they're on the franchise tag, which is a one-year contract, and they get hurt, there's no security mm-hmm. for the next year. I realize they're making money and all that stuff, but there's a big difference between 14 and 30, 40, 50 million dollars, and they want the security of a longer term contract.
That's what it is.
That's exactly it. And so he doesn't want to go out on a 1 year deal next year, regardless of how much money he's making, and risk injury. And running back, I think you could argue.
It's a business decision.
That's right.
That's what it is.
Running back, I think you could argue, has the biggest risk on the field.
What's the average, you know, a year or two right now as an NFL running back? A year might even be really good.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't have a problem with him not wanting to be franchised, but the fact that he's talking about it before their playoff game, it's like, wait till the end of the season.
Avoid distractions.
That's right.
At all costs.
That's right. Be like New England. Oh, we can't even say be like New England anymore.
Release the statement from all three at the same time.
while we're talking about the NFL, let me ask you this, because Matt Patricia still out there, hasn't been hired, but he's the defensive coordinator, of course, of the Patriots. Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator. Those are two of the hot names right now as far as the NFL coaching circles go. But Bill Belichick's assistants have not had much success. McDaniels, of course, flopped in a year and a half in Denver. You've got guys like Romeo Crennel, Eric Mangini, Jim Schwartz, your former head coach, Charlie Weiss, who was good for a couple of years, but then really tapered off after that. Why do you think that Belichick assistants maybe haven't had that much success as head coach?
Because they aren't Bill Belichick.
That's exactly it, right?
Yeah.
But they've been in that organization. They've been right in that system. Why haven't they been able to take that and make it work for themselves, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, that I'll bring up Braxton Cave again because he talked about the mentality that was there in New England. Mm-hmm. And he said it was unlike anything he had ever experienced. And that came from the top. So I think that is hard to replicate on your own. And, you know, Belichick is ahead of the curve and has been, good, bad, or otherwise, I guess. Whether it's training, recovery, from a football standpoint, all those things, you know, it's we got to find what's next before other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know as an assistant if that's how a lot of those guys are wired. Him being the guy, he's been doing that for a while now. So I think probably where these guys struggled the most is, you know, they probably brought over pieces of certain aspects, but can you recreate that same culture and same mentality? That's what sets the Patriots apart from the other teams in the league, and that's why they've been so successful over the past decade, is the culture that's been built there. And, you know, if you ask number of guys that played in New England and then go play for other programs or other teams, I would guarantee that that's one of the top things that they say is it's set up different.
There was a good article about a year or so ago that I think it was in Sports Illustrated that came out about how when a guy comes in, wants to coach for the Patriots, essentially Belichick will throw him in a room for like a week and say, okay, here's this film, break it down. And it's like, you can't just break down the play. Everything is kind of along the attention to detail you were talking about with Harry Heastand. Everything has to be broken down and crunched. And you essentially have to prove
your worth.
You can do it and that you want to sit there in that room day after day after day. And this is just as a low-level assistant coach putting together what's essentially their analytics for them.
And I mean, when you're bringing up these names too, you know, these guys were all very good in one area. That didn't necessarily mean that it was going to be replicated as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably really good in that culture too, with the talents that they had at that specific offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, position coach, whatever it was. And it didn't work out once they were able to call the shots for all the positions and the entire team.
They probably have to get out and demand those same kind of things from their assistants, and whether or not they do, maybe that's part of it. I guess you just don't know. But when you start and look at it, there have already been a lot of Belichick assistants who have had these opportunities, and it hasn't translated into success at all for them.
Yeah, which is really interesting, though.
Yeah,
because you would think that there'd be more carryover. You really would, because
absolutely,
they've been shown the blueprint on how to be successful day in and day out, how to train your players, how to, you know, access them, build relationships with them, and then what you do on Sundays. I mean, you have a firsthand experience on that. You are a part of that, and I'm sure that not being able to replicate that is frustrating for those guys, because when you were in New England, all you did was win.
That's right. Why am I not winning now?
Yeah, exactly. You know, why is this broken? What is not going on? And certainly there are going to be other outside factors too, whether it's, you know, the relationship with ownership, the players that you have there. And that's one thing that the Patriots do a really good job of is vetting the players that they do have coming in. You have a lot of niche players that are very good at certain things, and mm-hmm. they build the offense, they build the defense around that. It isn't specific to, we're going to run what I think is the best offense or best defense. We're going to run what works best for our guys.
But they've also stayed ahead of the curve in terms of not letting, they don't let a player stay too long.
Oh, no doubt.
And that's why this whole Tom Brady situation, right? It makes it even more interesting because you've got a guy who's already now in his 40s and...
Which is nuts. It's still nuts to me that's... And he's playing the way he's playing.
Yep. It is 12:38. I'll tell you what, we kind of diverged there a little bit. Let's take a time out and we come back and then we'll get to that... The situation with Clark Lee staying on. Get
we
some
still
of your
gotta
thoughts
hear,
on that.
Yeah, we still got to hear your thought, too, on what the bigger loss is.
I know. Bigger loss, Harry Hiestand or Clark Lee. We will do that.
They're
take
big,
another time
big
out.
Big losses, both.
Yeah, they are. They're both very big. Or I think I said Hiestand or Clark Lee.
Mike
it's
Elko.
Mike Elko, of course, Clark Lee taking over. So we'll do that when we return. 12:38, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Coming up on 12:42, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Don't forget, Budweiser's weekday sports beat comes your way 5 to 7 tonight and every weekday on WSBT. Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen in the first hour of the show, and I'll be with Darren in the second hour of the show. Mark Haley, the former South Bend Silverhawks manager and currently runs the Performance Center for the South Bend Cubs. He'll join us in the 6 o'clock hour tonight. So I've got that to look forward to. A little baseball talk tonight.
Yeah.
You were at
But come train at Sharply Training, though.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Of course. Right? I didn't even think about that. Well, let's talk a little Notre Dame football again. We were talking about the bigger loss. Mike Elko, the defensive coordinator, going to Texas A&M, or Harry Hiestand, the offensive line coach. Both of them happened within about, 4 days of each other, I
what
guess.
What do you got, Sean?
Your answer first is...
Well, it was a tough decision,
right?
But the reason why I went where I went was I looked at 4-8 season, I looked at the 10-3. What was my big reason between the turnaround, and it was the defense. So I had to go with Elko.
Very true. Hard to argue that. And I'm going with Hiestand because we've talked about the culture he's created for the offensive line, all the things they've done, the first round picks he's had, two already that he's had, and Zach Martin and Ronnie Stanley gonna have two more this year, and Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey. And I say him because I think the Elko loss would be bigger, and I agree with what you're saying about the turnaround, even though I think you can also throw the strength and conditioning as a big piece of that
sure. As
well. But I do think the defense was big. But I think the fact that they are able to keep the defense with Clark Lee being promoted from linebacker coach to defensive coordinator, and you also keep Mike Elston, the defensive line coach, and he gets promoted as well to associate head coach. I think
What was his previous title?
Assistant. He
okay.
went from assistant to associate. And how all
fantastic.
That's differentiated. Yeah. More money, I'm sure. But in any case.
Can I get promoted to associate on this show?
Yeah, that's right.
Associate host.
Evan Sharpley, associate coach.
There we go.
I'm Sean and Sharpley. Yeah, but so I think the fact that Clark Lee and the defense stays in place, they're not going to have to go out and find a.
Did you think they were going to have the stones to do that?
To promote him?
Yeah.
I really wasn't sure. I really was not sure, but I think because of the fact that Elston did get a promotion of his own and he stays on, and I think the next step for him now with these promotions that he's had becomes head coach somewhere down the line rather than coordinator and then head coach. But
he's been a man of many
hats. I really didn't know to answer your question about Clark Lee because there is – some relative inexperience, even though he's already been in the coaching ranks for 12 years. So it's not like he just became a coach a couple of years ago and then was a linebacker coach, and now all of a sudden he's a coordinator. But so that was the thing. I wasn't sure how much that would weigh into it. But, I mean, we talked last week about what a great communicator, teacher, everything Clark Lee is, and he has obviously worked under Mike Elko and knows – The details that Mike Elko himself painstakingly would emphasize. So I think it's really important that Clark Lee is staying in place. And so we haven't had a chance to talk about that.
What I fought for last week when we talked to was, you know, consistency and cohesion if you want to run the same defense, that was going to be the move that you were going to have to make. But if I'm going to play devil's advocate, you know, you're almost getting, you're into a situation now where you, if we're talking about, you know, a play, you have the lead role. That lead role is gone now, and now you're relying on the apprentice who's been watching and learning all the lines.
Very true.
And knows what to do, but
kind of goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago with Belichick. And
yeah,
no, it's a different situation still, going from coordinator, assistant to head coach. That's completely different because of what you said. There's so much more that comes under the umbrella. But again, it's
his stamp.
You're making the move up. That's right. You're not just the assistant.
Buck now will stop defensively as far as play calling goes right there.
But at the same time, all this stuff with Elko came up when Notre Dame was at the Citrus Bowl. It initially came up, and they thought they took care of it. But as soon as it comes up, Brian Kelly has to start thinking, okay, what's my next move if that happens? Yeah. So he had some time to think about it. I don't think he made a snap decision by any means with promoting Clark Lee. Do you?
I got to think that his thought process is very similar to ours. Do we want to start over again?
Mm-hmm.
3 years, three defenses. We don't want to do that. What is our best option to make sure that that doesn't take place? And that's why we talked about that's where it starts. Whether it was going to be to promote Elston to defensive coordinator, make him the defensive coordinator, and keep Lee on. But what did we talk about? We said, well, if you do that, wouldn't it make more sense then for Lee to go to Texas A&M? So it had to be promoting him defensive coordinator.
Right.
Because it's got to be coming from him. Who's going to be the mouth at practice? It's got to come from the guy who knows what it is. And you let Elston do what he did. He was great last year, getting that defensive line ready to play.
Oh, absolutely.
And then everything else will come from. And there, you know, it's a collective group effort as far as the coaching staff goes on the defensive side.
Well, you were talking about though with Harry Hiestand, the 6 inches, you're lined up 6 inches. I mean, we saw a lot of that last spring when we got to get in there, and when Mike Elko was first installing his defense. But we always get when we're indoors, we're always down at the end of the field where the defensive line works. So you always, whoever the defensive line coach is, you get to hear some of that. But we got to hear a lot of those kind of things from Mike Elston working with those
linemen. Elston, he always had his coffee. He was ready to go.
There was never low energy.
No. He brought it. And those guys responded, too. And that's, you know, that I think that was, you know, that was fun to see in that role. And you brought this up last week, too. I mean, the most success he had coaching a position was in 2012 when he was coaching the defensive line.
Yeah.
This is right up his alley. I mean, it's a high-effort position, and it was pretty great to see what he did with that group of guys. And will he be able to continue that? He had some young players that played.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some guys returning. I think the question mark on the defensive line is whether or not Jerry Tillery is going to be back. And we're in crunch time right now. For
3 days away now from when they have to make up their mind.
And, you know, I'm sure that those guys are sitting down, or I would assume they're sitting down with their families and the coaching staff and looking at those draft grades. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into those decisions. You know, there's, you know, I think the question you ask a lot of times is, you know, am I ready to go play in the NFL? There's that. But there's also some other factors too on, you know, is this a decision, a family decision, where financially I could be set up right away if I go and perform well. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. I think retaining Lee and keeping Elston does a lot of favors to keep both of those guys, to keep Tillery and Coney. I think that if Lee would have left or been offered a job somewhere else and he would have taken it, I don't think Coney would come back.
I think he's gone for sure regardless. Now, both of them got the go back to school
right
grades. Coney, of course, led the team with 116 tackles, 17 in the Citrus Bowl. He was named to USA Today's All-Bowl team just the other day. Team high 13 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, and then Jerry Tillery led the team with 4.5 sacks. Had the most tackles for a defensive lineman with 56, including 9 for loss. As much improvement as both of them made, I still think there's a lot more ceiling, and both of these guys could at the very worst be mid-second round picks if they come back and then go into the draft next year. Whereas right now, you're probably talking at best mid-third round, and more realistically is somewhere in the fourth round at best. And there's a big difference between what you're going to make in those rounds.
And at a program like Notre Dame, too, Notre Dame needs these types of guys to come back for the sole reason of depth, allowing younger players, you know, a year to develop in the strength and conditioning program to get in the playbook. These are the these right here are the type of decisions from a roster standpoint that are important 2-3 years down the road.
Because we're sitting here 3 days from when they have to make up their mind to be, announce their decision, do you think there's a better chance they both come back, both leave, or one of them is coming back?
I think they're both coming back.
That's what I think.
I would lean towards that right now. And, you know, we spoke when both offensive guys, and also, too, I mean, it's not like they're rushing to make a decision. If you know, you usually know, and you say, I know, I'm going pro. Who did that? Josh Adams and St. Brown. They knew. These guys are either really on the fence and, you know, one way or the other, or I think that they're it's going to be a run off the clock and it's, oh, yeah, we are. We are coming back.
Well, and that's what, and I said this last night on SportsBeat, I maybe because of the fact all these things going on in the last week with Mike Elko leaving, but also the grade that they got from the draft advisory board, like they're fighting themselves maybe a little bit. They both would really like to come back, but the writing on the wall says you really you shouldn't do that.
Right. Or they want to go.
They like to go.
It's appealing.
They would like to go, but yeah, the writing on the wall says you should come back.
And especially given both guys, both coaches coming back too.
Yep, absolutely. USA Today gave Notre Dame a B-plus overall for the season. You agree with that?
Yeah. I'm okay with that grade.
It makes sense. They were good, but in the end, not completely great. They did a lot of things well, but there's still room for improvement. I think we'd all agree with that, right?
Yeah, lost to a good Georgia team, as we saw in the national championship game. Great game. Unbelievable game. And the Miami loss, I didn't
see. Good game or good finish?
Good finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ho-hum, I guess, till halftime.
Things got interesting when...
I still couldn't believe that Saban pulled the trigger and benched Jalen Hurts.
Pretty bold.
He's 25-2 as a starting quarterback.
I know. But he wasn't doing anything either.
No, he wasn't.
And they had to be able to throw the ball, obviously.
And in the post-game interview, too, they asked, and he goes, we couldn't throw. We had to do something.
Yep.
I mean, he was pretty, you know, he was pretty blunt with that. Which, if you're going to make a decision, stand behind why. And, you know, as a true freshman coming in that situation, that was pretty impressive.
Tell you what, got to take a quick timeout. Want to come back, get some thoughts from you. You went to the American Baseball Coaches Association convention, the national convention last week. We'll have a couple minutes. I want to get some of your thoughts on that when we return. Sean and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. We are winding down this edition of Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT South Bend with former Notre Dame quarterback Evan Sharply. I'm Sean Stiers. And again, don't forget Budweiser's weekday sports beat comes your way 5 till 7 o'clock tonight on WSBT. I was mentioning, Evan, you got to go to the ABCA, the American Baseball Coaches Association National Convention. It was in Indianapolis last week. Anything noteworthy?
I was only there for a day. I spoke.
Okay.
So I spoke with the Blast Motion panel. That's the sensor that we use on our baseball bats at Sharply Training that gives us some metrics, swing speed, time to contact, attack angle. There's a 3D tracer now, which is really cool, that shows your body angle, that shows your swing path. Those are all things that we use as far as feedback goes. So I was on a panel with the Michigan State head coach, the Duke assistant coach, the Butler assistant coach. Then we had a high school coach from Kansas. And then as a facility owner, then I spoke how we used it. We use it a lot. We logged almost 31,000 swings with the sensor this past year.
31,000.
And that doesn't count swings that without the sensor. So we got a lot of guys, and I was kind of looking at that number. That's how many times I'm throwing the ball unless we're doing tee work. So my arm has gotten a lot of use this year. And
it adds up quick, doesn't it?
It does, and which is kind of funny because it's a segue to something new that we're doing at Sharply Training now with our quarterbacks is we're using what's called the Modus QB, and it's a sleeve that goes on your elbow, and it tracks torque on your elbow. It also tracks a couple other things, so it'll monitor the arm stress. It'll get a daily count on your throws, your arm angle, arm speed, fingertip velocity, shoulder rotation. We're adding all those things to the quarterback training, but it kind of got me thinking when I'm throwing all these, you know, and I saw how many swings that we have, to monitor that. But we're going to use that for our quarterbacks now too, which is okay. A really neat tool. So, you know, technology, and that was one big thing, a takeaway from the ABCA convention was how big the move for technology in baseball is unbelievable right now. There's a lot more data-driven programs, both at the high school, college, and even pro level now. We saw that with the Houston Astros, mm-hmm. But there are more coaches buying into it. So it's interesting to hear a lot of perspective. You have some old-school coaches on how they're using the technology. Some of them don't know how to use it. They just use it as a way to get swings for their guys and accountability. And then there's guys like me that are using it, the numbers, and using all the numbers and making decisions to coach and help the swing based on that. So it was neat. A lot of fun people there. The talks were great. I think that we're on the cusp of certain areas in baseball, not necessarily changing, but with all the technology and all the data now, there's going to be some updates.
I saw something. I think it might have been on, somebody tweeted it yesterday, Trevor Bauer, the Cleveland Indians.
116.9 with a 3-ounce baseball.
There you go.
So 2 ounces lighter over at Driveline in Seattle.
116 miles an hour.
Yeah, so they go overload, underload baseball, so heavier than an actual baseball.
But he was only
lighter.
Throwing like, what, 15 or 20 feet too, right?
Well, yeah, so it's right out of hand. They do what's called pull down, so they're basically doing a running start and then throwing it, but... almost 117 miles an hour.
Amazing stuff. And you talk about all the data and everything else, and I think that's a big part of why we still haven't seen most of these free agents go anywhere, is because all these teams have the data now. No one's just going out and risking throwing a bunch of money around.
That's why Hosmer didn't get the big contract.
That's right. Still waiting to go somewhere. All right. Thanks, Evan. We will talk to you next week. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, WSBT South Bend.